columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Football at 4. Here's The Drive with Tyler Columbus and D-Mac.
We want to thank Elijah Wilkinson for joining us. You know, when you think about whenever we get back to, real practice, Tyler, you think about the stories of training camp. Where would you put the Garrett Bowles-Elijah Wilkinson competition?
I hope it's front and center because that would mean it's a very legitimate competition. You know, I don't know how legitimate it's going to be. And after interviewing Elijah, I feel even more questions yeah, about if it's going to be for real. You know, he's like, you know, yeah, for now, everything can change. It's all fluid. We'll see what happens. it didn't really feel like he believed that he was in a competition or maybe he was a little bit hesitant about it, whatever it might be. It should be. Let's see, of all the storylines, you know, as far as, like, positions up for grab, it's number one on the priority list. As far as interesting storylines go, well, you're gonna have all your wide receivers, Michael Ojemudia, what's happening with the corners. But this is going to be the biggest battle of training camp, yes.
Yeah, gosh, it might be story number one. It might be. I'm trying to think
of it. It should be. I hope it is, D-Mac.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what other positions out there are kind of open for.
No, the only other position that they've got any sort of battle going on whatsoever is at corner. You know, if Michael Ojemudia and Bryce Callahan are duking it out for the true number two spot, maybe you've got one there, but I've got my doubts on that. I would imagine that Ojemudia is more than likely going to be your rotational kind of nickel guy that comes in, your number three type of corner.
You don't think Callahan's just in the slot someplace?
Well, okay, so do you think Callahan's going to be the one coming in and out of the game?
Oh, my gosh, that's such a tricky one.
I mean, I was assuming that Michael, the rookie, is going to be the one that comes in out of the game, well, and Callahan's going to be on the field the majority of the time.
How often are you in nickel, Tyler?
A lot. I mean, a lot, for sure, especially in today's game.
Right.
When I first got in the NFL, you would be in base personnel on first and second down almost the entirety. And in a true West Coast offense, you are. But when you're looking at this Pat Shurmur offense, especially with the Giants, D-Mac, if we get the type of play calling that he had with the Giants, they'll be a nickel the entirety of the game.
Right. So we'll see. But, I mean, it was kind of interesting that Elijah Wilkinson heard about the battle to come the same that you did, whoever's listening right now, that we did, that everybody did.
Like, yeah, you know what, Kevin, I don't know if you had a chance to cut that one up yet or not, but if you get a chance, cut it up, because there's some interesting responses in there. What'd you make of the part where he's like, yeah, for now, everything's fluid, we'll see what happens? What'd you make of that?
I don't know if they're really communicating with them all that well. I think they want Bowles to work out. I do.
Yeah, and he knows that.
He knows. But I think it's more of a competition than it's ever been. I just laugh, Tyler, and once you get to the NFL, where sometimes you just got to adjust to stuff you're not used to. Like, we're watching when we'll get into it deeper in about a half hour, the Vikings and the Bears game, the last game of the season in 2017, and there's Mike Remmers playing right guard. And they say, well, Remmers hasn't played guard, you know, like in a decade.
Yeah.
And there he is in an NFL game. So when I ask Elijah, who more or less was on the right side, about being a left tackle, all I hear from you guys is how complicated things are on the right or left side.
D-Mac, I thought it was a good question, and I don't know if you noticed, but I followed up on it, and I was trying to really just kind of get a feel for his confidence level. And, you know, he's probably he's trying to walk a fine line here where he's trying to not be over-arrogant or try to assume that he's going to win the job. So that's a tough position when you're in a battle. But I specifically asked him, are you natural on the left side? Do you feel like that's a position that you can go out and win it? And, you know, he kind of danced around it a little bit, said that, after he gets some more reps and after he gets an opportunity to go up there against some of these young pass rushers, he'll be there. He'll be ready for it. But it didn't sound like that was the position that he feels the most comfortable at.
He doesn't really look like a left tackle. I mean, Elijah's a great dude. But when I've met him a million times, he looks like a guard. To me, he looks like a guard.
Elijah is a very good option at guard. And when he's been, I say that because when they've asked him to play guard in game situations, he's played at a high level. He's looked really good. Matter of fact, he played so well at the guard position that they're like, okay, well, maybe we'll just go ahead and put him out there at tackle and he'll become our full-time tackle while Juwan James is down. He has not looked as good when he's playing the tackle position.
No.
And if he didn't look as good at right tackle, making the switch over to the left side, I don't know. I've got my concerns about whether this is really going to be a battle or not, D-Mac.
He's got to accept the challenge. I think it's more that they've really lost faith in Garrett Bowles, but
isn't that confusing though,
because we were told that Bowles and Wilkinson, no matter what, were better options than Ezra Cleveland or Josh Jones, that Ezra Cleveland, Josh, and we were also told that Tristan Wirfs is a right tackle, not a left tackle, so we're not interested in moving up two spots for Tristan Wirfs and making him a left tackle as a right tackle.
What about Juwan James? I mean, you're paying him a lot of money. Could he play left tackle? You know, like all those excuses just
That's
go out the window to me, D-Mac. Of course Juwan James could play left tackle in the league if he had to. Of course Tristan Wirfs could play left tackle in the league. I'm telling you right now that, well, listen, maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe this will end up being one of those moments like when I liked Garrett Bowles' film coming out of college. But I don't think it will be. I think Tristan Wirfs could play any position in the NFL. What they told you is just flat out Garrett Bowles was okay. That's what they told you throughout all of it.
We cut up a bunch. Oh my gosh, look at you guys. They're so fast back at the station. They cut up so much Elijah Wilkinson.
Nice work.
Yeah, they got almost everything. What were you interested in hearing again?
Well, play the response after it. I asked him is he natural at left tackle and do you feel like you can win that spot?
Oh boy. All right. I don't know that.
Or I'll give you another option if you come across this one.
Go ahead.
Well, just the part, I can't remember what the question was, but when he responded that, you know, it's all just kind of fluid. We'll see what happens in a couple months' time.
Yeah, Kevin, you're going to have to help me out because I don't know where that is in those cuts. But if you know it, Kevin, go ahead, play it, Kevin.
Finally, one position. It's finally, you know, but it is one position, but it's not. Because, you know, at the same time, you know, they're like, oh, this guy can do, you know, this position, this position, this position. So if, you know, things hit the fan, they're going to be like, hey, you know, we need you to do this. And, you know, me playing in a pro-style system in college kind of really helped me, you know, be able to adjust to the game, you know, kind of know the X's and O's a little bit better than some. So that has kind of speeded my process up with learning the new playbook because, you know, things are really the same, you know, in the NFL. It's a copycat league. So, you know, it's been kind of simple learning the playbook. I'm just ready to get back out there.
How was it?
Okay. Well, that wasn't quite the one that I was hoping for, but yeah, there's some good info in there.
All right. Elijah Wilkinson up for the battle and getting a haircut and a good dude. And
he seems like a great dude, doesn't he?
He does. And it's just going to be another chapter in overcoming the odds. It is. I think the deck's stacked against him. But they did not go out and get another offensive tackle in the draft. They didn't do it. So they must have some sort of faith in him. And
just real quick here, D-Mac, I do feel for him when you get put in a position where a team tells you that you've got a chance to go compete for a starting job, open competition. I've been in that spot. I have. And he's not wrong. You'll be in that open competition until somebody gets hurt. And then as soon as somebody gets hurt, guess what happens? There's no longer a competition going on at left tackle. You are the next best available offensive lineman, and they got to put you over somewhere else. It happened to me multiple times in the first few years of my career, and it's really difficult, man. When you become the jack of all trades, it's tough to become the master of one.
All right, it's Hot Take Tuesday, brought to you by Papa Murphy's. Order your pizza for pickup today. It's Steelers week, and we have some hot takes / prop bets, but we're happy to take your hot takes as well at 303-713-1043. and I have some Melvin Gordon sound about Melvin Gordon talking about Philip Lindsay. Woo! Interesting stuff. Stick around. You'll hear it next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
4433.
Hello, Colorado. David Chemansky here with U.S. Mortgages, and the world as we knew it is likely changed forever from COVID. We want to help as much as possible during these challenging times, so we have decided to extend our USM friends and family discount to everyone.
Dave, that's great news for so many listeners.
Yes, it's a huge undertaking by our staff, but the consensus was unanimous. We're here, we are ready, we can help. So even if you've tried elsewhere and were told no because FICOs were under 700 or denied access or approval to a HELOC or your equity line or told that cash out loans are no longer available, we are here to say yes. Act now and get up to a 90-day break from payments that won't hurt your credit or ability for future loans either. And with rates at historic low levels, the time to act is now. We're even easier to remember for our low rates by simply calling 303-LOW-RATE. That's 303-LOW-RATE or online at usmloan.com.
All loans subject to approval and change. License number 392-126.
Hello, Colorado. David Chemansky here. This segment is brought to you by U.S. Mortgages. Talk to us first.
All guests appear on the Fireball Hotline. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
All right, it's Hot Take Tuesday. And it is also Steelers Week. Hot Take Tuesday brought to you by Papa Murphy's. Order your pizza for pickup today. Tyler, hot take. Big Ben gets hurt early in the Steelers-Giants game. Mason Rudolph comes in last quarter, gets in a fight with Dexter Lawrence, suspended for the Broncos game. So Paxton Lynch starts the game and is playing pretty well. And in the fourth quarter, is sacked by Vaughn and fumbles the ball to lose the game and ends up crying on the field.
Oh, my gosh. That is one heck of a hot take. Generally speaking, when I go for a hot take, D-Mac, I only give one because it's kind of hard to hit on a hot take. But there's about 12 different hot takes going on in this text.
You know what's crazy about that? That take exists in the world of reality.
All right. Well, let's break it down bit by bit here.
Ben Roethlisberger gets hurt.
Okay, sure. That could happen. He's coming off injury, for sure.
Mason Rudolph comes in and gets in a fight with Dexter Lawrence for his hit on Big Ben and is suspended for the Broncos game. Well, we've seen Mason Rudolph chop it up, haven't we, Tyler? It's not like that hasn't happened before. Okay. So Paxton Lynch starts
specifically,
the game.
He's going to get in a fight with Dexter Lawrence, though, huh?
Yes.
Okay. So
Paxton Lynch starts the game. Now, okay, that presumes that this sounds ridiculous, but Paxton Lynch is the third quarterback on that team. Didn't they draft a quarterback in the Steelers? Oh, gosh. I could have sworn they even picked one up besides Paxton.
But, oh, I don't know.
Paxton Lynch starts the game. He's the third string quarterback, and things happen where Paxton Lynch is starting the game. I mean, that did happen in Minnesota.
If Paxton Lynch did not get in the game last year with everything the Steelers had going on, I mean, between Duck Dynasty, the quarterback battle, Big Ben was hurt, there has never been a better opportunity, including his time with the Denver Broncos, for Paxton Lynch to take over. I don't know why he's even on the team at that point. There is no chance Paxton Lynch is getting in the game.
All right. Well, that kind of ruins the hot take. I'm just saying if he's the third quarterback.
Seriously, Jack, think about that. Think about how sad that is for a second. He was a first-round draft pick.
Oh, I know.
They could not get on the field last year in that situation.
I know.
Wow.
It's awful. Well, let's just assume all this happens.
Okay. Yeah, it all happens.
And we'll get to the last part of the hot take.
I hope Mason Rudolph's okay from his fight.
First of all, it says Paxton starts the game and is playing pretty well. Well, that's assuming a lot. But and in the fourth quarter is sacked by Vaughn. Well, that's possible. Fumbles the ball to lose the game. That's possible. And ends up crying on the field.
Well, that's possible. I was standing 10 feet from him at that game, D-Mac, out there in Oakland. I'll never forget it.
How was that?
Man, D-Mac.
How were the boo-hoos?
Man, I was standing there on the sideline. I was doing the sideline for the broadcast, and you know, we were all over Paxton Lynch for sure because this was a big game. This was we've been waiting for this type
of
thing.
Here we go.
And
yes.
So here we go, and I remember I was hovering every time the offense would come to the sideline. I was trying to get as close to that quarterback situation as I could just to kind of see if I could pick up on any insight. And so, man, I'm hovering behind him. And out there in Oakland, you could actually get behind the bench. It was perfect. Well, dude, I see this, and I radio up to my producer, and I was like, hey, man, I'm not quite sure what to do with this, but if you want to pod me up, if you want to make me hot, Paxton Lynch is actually crying. He's actually got his hands in his face, and I can see literal tears coming down his cheek.
Oh, my God. That's terrible. I feel bad laughing.
I know, D-Mac. I felt bad even reporting it. And thank God.
So how did the report go? Let's get out of the
sideline. I was just going to say, thank God he actually said, all right, you know what? I'll just pass that one on to Dave.
no way, man. You guys blew it. That would have been the best report of all time.
Dude, I don't know what I would have said.
Recreate the scene. It's I get the information. I'm doing play-by-play, and I'm coaching Cherry Creek to championships.
You know, let's toss it on down to Tyler.
Yeah, let's go to Tyler. I understand you have a report on Paxton Lynch. What's happening with Paxton on the bench?
Well, Dave, you know, this is a unique situation. I can't say I've ever seen this one before. The starting quarterback of the Denver Broncos, Paxton Lynch, he's actually so devastated by what's going on, he is crying. He's actually, you know what? You can see the support. The teammates are really concerned. Oh, actually, Dave, man, I don't see anybody within a 20-foot radius of him.
So he's crying by himself?
He's actually all by himself on the bit. You know what? Guys, I got to go. I'm going to go give him a pat on the back. The guy looks a little bit sad.
All right. Tyler is going to go hug Paxton Lynch and back to the action on the field. What would you have? Would you really? Hey, Dave, Paxton's crying.
Honestly, it would have been something like that. I would have said, in all my years, I've never come across this one. I've never seen a starting quarterback crying. I have seen guys cry after the game. That's not as uncommon as you would think. A lot goes into this game, man. There's a lot of passion.
I get it. But listen, I don't even depending on the situation, okay. But he cried for like 15 straight minutes.
I know.
He like didn't stop. And you are right. Nobody went over there to console him.
Nobody. Nobody. He was all by himself. It was the most awkward thing I've ever seen.
It's like he's a poor little pirate and he's crying. It's, you know, and the mascara's.
You get a little bit seasick when you've been out to sea too long. You know, he'd been in the game a little bit too long. He got a little bit sick.
On the text line, I remember I'd walked into the house and I saw Paxton crying on TV. I was joking, but I said that right there is the end of his career. Well, kind of. I mean, it's tough to come back from that one with your teammates and the media. It is hard. Not going to lie, man. That's when I was done with them. And listen, I get being emotional and all that and all the work that went into it, but it was obvious he just wasn't emotionally ready to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. It was obvious.
No.
So,
you know, that
I wish I'd add upon him.
Look, I'm really not. I'm an emotional man, and I've cried way more than any man ever should in his life. I really have, and I really am emotional. But, man, that's a pretty good sign that a guy is not mentally tough on a football field. You know, like it's one thing to cry over something that is emotional in your life, but in the midst of like a testosterone driven game that the most macho of macho sports that we have. I mean, come on, man.
The crazy thing is the game was far from over. In fact, Trevor led the Broncos to a bit of a comeback. And if it wasn't for the fact that Aqib Talib got kicked out of the game, and we had the who's the receiver who played cornerback that we drafted stupidly?
Wait, Aqib got kicked out of that one after kicked out after he stole the chain the third time or something?
Yes. Yeah, he got kicked out of that one. And Trevor,
I also was right in the middle of that fight. That turned into a gigantic fight, dude.
Right.
I seriously like I had to dodge somebody. I had to jump to get out of the way.
Who's the dude that we drafted as a cornerback but was really a receiver?
And Brendan Langley.
Brendan Langley. So Brendan Langley is playing corner. If you don't remember the game, Trevor's leading a bit of a comeback because Trevor was a healthy bench. They wanted – he wasn't hurt. They were just trying to get Paxton Lynch out there. And then, you know, then they pulled Paxton because he was hurt and crying. And Trevor never cried. Trevor went through some bad crap.
No, he took his losses like a man. And he went out there and had failures and took it like a man.
Brandon Langley, who has said he doesn't like running backwards. He actually said that, and he was a cornerback in the NFL, and he got torched where Aqib would have played better. It's just the whole thing was like it was.
I don't remember Langley. He fell apart in that game.
Yes, go back and watch the last 8 minutes. You know, and you'll see what I'm talking about. I got this Melvin Gordon stuff too. Let me just play. Let me play this Melvin Gordon stuff really quick, and we'll get back to it later. But here's Melvin Gordon on the Ian Rappaport podcast talking about how him and Philip Lindsay will work together.
Well, to be honest, I didn't think they were looking for a running back either. It just kind of fell, and how it happened. But I definitely didn't think, you know, coming into free agency that Denver was looking for a running back. And I spoke to Philip, you know, a couple times. I went to a Pro Bowl. We met there. And, you know, we chopped it up, and, you know, I know he was unhappy about me coming, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's tough. You know, you just got to do what you got to do. And, you know, I feel like we could be a good duo, but, you know, it's tough.
There's no conviction there, is there? No conviction that I think they can be a good duo too, Tyler, but you can see how awkward this is. Okay. We'll get to more of it coming up. We'll get back to that. But when we come back, it's Pat's playbook. The season's over for the Vikings and Pat Shurmur. And wow, what a season Pat Shurmur had. And they are meeting up with our friends the Bears and Vic Fangio. So another look at Vic Fangio's defense. And Bryce Callahan is a star for the wrong reasons in this one. All of those details coming up next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
We've had a great time looking at the Viking season of 2017 to figure out how Pat Shurmur is going to call the plays with the Denver Broncos. And what a year he had, Tyler. And on the broadcast, there was nothing but talk of Pat Shurmur, you know, having an opportunity as a head coach, that's for sure. And this is another one. This is how they finished up going 13-3.
First down and goal. Touchdown! Returnable kick from Quigley. And it's taken on the other side of the field is Callahan. Look at this. Callahan with big room. No one there. Gonna go! Touchdown, Chicago!
I did hear a good thing about Callahan there. We'll get to that in a second. But first, what were your takeaways as the Vikings go 13-3? They stomp out John Fox and end his career as a coach with the Bears. And they get the number 2 seed, a bye week. And, man, they look like they could absolutely win the Super Bowl right here, right now.
Yeah, just a whole lot of what we've previously been seeing over the last I guess the entire season, really. The Vikings are just a super football team. They're so well-rounded. They've got a good offense. They've got a great running game, an okay passing game that they get enough yards, especially off of play action, that it makes up for it. And they've got a fantastic defense. They got up to off to a hot start. It was 14-0, and they cased through a pick six to Bryce Callahan there.
It wasn't a pick six.
It was not.
Was not. It was that fake punt thing.
Oh, that's what it was. You're right.
Yeah, where yep. Tariq Cohen is.
Callahan fell and then flipped the field, right?
Callahan started kneeling down on the field to be as small as possible. Like, he's barely on the field. Cohen is waving his arms. The punter kicks the ball. The punter for the Bears must have been screaming, no, the other way. And the ball, Callahan actually had made a good athletic play to catch the ball. He had to kind of like slide to catch
it.
Right. But everybody was over watching Tariq Cohen. So as soon as Callahan got up, I mean, I could have run that.
It was a well-executed play, man. I tell you what.
It was beautiful. But before that, Callahan had 2 pass interference calls for a total of 51 yards of penalty yards in the first half, including one on Jarius Wright. Who? Exactly. So on a team with Diggs and Thielen and Kyle Rudolph, he's interfering with Jarius Wright in the end zone. He wasn't even on any of the top guys, and he got called. Now, he made a nice play later on. He got his head turned around and made a good play on Diggs. But those were my observations about Bryce Callahan. Definitely up and down. And, dude, the Vikings just dominated again running the ball.
I know.
Dominated.
I can't believe how good Murray looks in this season. I mean, gosh, is this guy a good running back?
20 carries for 111 yards with two touchdowns. Tough. And when I see here Melvin Gordon say, I don't know how they're going to use us, Tyler, I know exactly how they should be using Melvin Gordon and Phillip Lindsay. Just like Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon. It has worked so well with these two guys. They accounted for 155 yards on 32 carries just in this game alone.
Yeah, it's certainly been a fantastic year on the ground. I guess my question for you would be, is that going to be the plan? You know, that wasn't the plan for the Vikings going into this season. They lost their bell cow early on, and then they went to a two-back system.
Well,
you know, what's the plan? As of today, as Pat Shurmur sits there and looks at it, is he looking at it like he's going to have a Saquon Barkley situation?
Right.
Or is he looking at it like he's going to have a two-back system?
And that you are so right to say that, because when he became the head coach with the Giants and he had Saquon Barkley, who was healthy his rookie year, it was nothing but Saquon Barkley.
Right.
And it wasn't great for their offense. Here's what's got me concerned when I'm watching this last game. All sorts of little stuff come out. You have to understand, so this is 2017 when he was the full-time offensive coordinator. Well, he was the interim offensive coordinator the year before because North Turner, I don't know if you remember this, remember North Turner just walked away like in November? Like, he wasn't really fired.
I do. Yeah, very, very unusual move. Yep.
And so, in this broadcast, they said Pat Shurmur admitted he kept a lot of the Norv Turner offense with this team in 2017. Now, this is what concerns me. This means whatever he got rid of and established with the Giants was his. And he really didn't have to keep going with the North Turner offense once he got to the Giants.
I think that's true. You see that happen a lot. Coordinators will keep things from the previous regime that had success, and because they want it to be easy on their guys, they don't have to learn all too much. I guess if you're really looking for reasons for concern as far as play calling goes, I would just start with the QB. You know, I think what we saw with the Vikings, a huge part of that commitment to the running game and a huge part of the reason why they played underneath center so much is because they were trying to hide Case Keenum. They certainly, I don't know if they were trying to hide Case Keenum, but they certainly weren't trying to build the offense around Case Keenum.
Correct.
They certainly weren't trying to empower Case Keenum.
Right.
You look at Daniel Jones. Everything went through Daniel Jones. Everything
Correct.
Was in the shotgun. The entire
right.
offense was built around him. And Daniel Jones and Drew Locke, the similarities there, they're unbelievable. If you're Pat Shurmur looking at that, you're like, okay, I got what I had last year in Daniel Jones. Now, maybe he'll look at it and say, I was not a very good play caller last year, and I need to change that up. But it would be tempting to go back to the same type of offense as he had for Daniel Jones.
That's what I'm nervous about. And let me tell you, it was weird. It was kind of slight torture last night as ESPN was replaying the Case Keenum Broncos Chiefs game. We saw that when we were on the air last night. And we're like, oh, yeah, this game's on. And how did the game end? And it ended because Case Keenum overshot Demaryius Thomas. And I went back and looked at it. 19 seconds to go. 3rd and 10. And I'm telling you, when we watched Case Keenum in 2017, Tyler, he completes that pass to Thielen or Diggs every time.
Yep.
Every time he completes that pass. I don't know what was going on with Case Keenum. So I went back and looked at that play last night with the Broncos. It was a good pocket. He wasn't pressured all that much. He just had to make a pretty relatively easy throw, and he airmailed it. Although I watched DT's reaction on it, too, and it's like, oh, man. You know, somehow Thielen and Diggs made that catch. You know, there's just something that was a little bit off. There was just something a little bit off completely. And, man, can you imagine if the Broncos with Case Keenum beat the Chiefs in that particular game relatively early on in 2018? I think that would have been a huge game changer for them for the rest of the season.
Oh, of course it would. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Keenum. He's 21 of 29 for 189 yards, Tyler, averaging 6.5. He was kind of back to the Case Keenum who was playing right at the beginning of the year, more a little bit more conservative and kind of more reasonable. And
well, when did he go away from that? I don't recall a single game in which it didn't look like this.
Well, I mean, he put up some pretty huge numbers. Kind of maybe in weeks like 12 through.
But they weren't coming off like super aggressive shot plays. It was just managing the team.
No.
It was just managing the down and distance.
And playing with the lead and punishing the other team with the running game. And a great defense. A really great defense. And I'm watching this, Tyler. I can't figure out why they didn't win the Super Bowl. And we'll watch the next. We only have two games left, right? We'll see the miracle when they beat the Saints, right? When we all remember that. And then they get blown out by the Eagles. But I'm and encouraged by Pat Shurmur, Tyler, but I do wonder, and I'm curious what you think, what offense will he really, if we hear Melvin Gordon saying he's not sure how it's all going to work, how do you think it's going to work?
I think it's going to be the Giants. That's what we're going to be watching for so many reasons. Number one, that was Pat Shurmur's most recent tendencies. Okay, so that's where his head was at in the most recent place.
Yeah.
Not going back a handful of years. No, this is where he was last year. And then number two, you talk about the quarterbacks. You talk about the similarities. And then number three, you talk specifically about Drew Lock, and you say, okay, he came out of a spread system in Missouri. A lot of people were concerned about how he was going to play underneath center. He's very comfortable there. You've got a rookie QB. You're going to want to put him in a position where you feel like he can succeed. If I had to gamble on this one, I would gamble that we're going to see the Giants offense.
Okay, Nikki Javala will join us next. She's talking to politicians about opening up the state. And why is Nikki... Joey, her dog, is in the spotlight for a very embarrassing reason. Details next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Here's Tyler Columbus and Dina.
Kabbalah of The Athletic is one of our fantastic fan Broncos insiders, brought to you courtesy of Perry's Pizza. Hi, Nikki. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Super duper.
Good.
You talked to a couple politicians today. What'd you learn?
Yeah, I talked to Governor Polis yesterday and Mayor Michael Hancock of Denver today, and both seem pretty eager to get sports back under the right conditions, of course. So I think they're just kind of waiting for baseball and to reach an agreement to restart their season and then see how they do and then welcome the NFL. So things are kind of moving in the right direction for both leagues, it seems, although, you know, the baseball players in the league seem kind of far apart on the agreement, but, you know, they got to get games going again.
How strong is that momentum? How close are we?
Baseball, I'm not so sure. I think it comes down to the salary, right? That's what I've been hearing just reading from some of our baseball reporters. Football, I mean, they have more time. They've only just established protocols and started to reopen facilities today, really. And the Broncos will slowly phase things in. Starting next week, they're going to allow some employees to work from their training facility in their stadium. But, you know, for 90% of their staff, really, they're still going to be remote. Players still aren't allowed back in. Coaches still aren't allowed back in. So kind of wait and see right now with them.
Yeah, but it's okay, though, if you go to a private prep school and have a virtual practice. In fact, you should be doing that, as we learned, right? Because that's what Tom Brady has done and others. So I find it interesting, Nikki, that, yeah, there's certain rules that you're not supposed to do, right?
Technically, but correct.
Don't you think after the whole world watches Tom Brady practice with his entire offense, there's going to be a certain amount of pressure?
Well, they're already doing it. What was Drew Lock doing previously, Nikki? We just had the reports of him doing similar things, right?
He's been throwing with some of his receivers. I was told it was responsible. It's not like the whole offense. But, you know, if he's in Douglas County, some of this is fair game, which, you know, he did buy a house out here in March. So they have been throwing some, and it's I think it's been under, you know, the 10-person limit, and they're wearing gloves, the receivers. So, but I, you know, from what I told you, he's actually really trying to organize and kind of take that leadership role as a quarterback. I mean, it's such a huge year for him and the offense as a whole. So yeah, they've thrown some at public parks. You got to remember, like, the facility's closed. They can't use that big, beautiful indoor facility that is just sitting there, and they can't go to, you know, high schools because campuses are closed. So
theoretically,
yeah, it's going to be like Peyton and Stokely, you know, playing catch while he's on his free agent tour. You might see Drew Lock. So,
well, there's a big empty field literally across the street from the facility there.
Yeah.
I mean, and Tom Brady got, you know, the equivalent of valor to open up for him.
Well, it's Tampa Bay down there. You kind of, well, right, kind of expected.
I'm just asking. Why not just open up the facilities then, if this is going on already? And this is usually a time that you'd bring people in. Why not just do this?
PR and lawsuits.
Oh, all right.
Guys get sick. It's on their watch, and it's on their facility. They don't want to be responsible.
Okay, let me ask this question a different way. Do you think there'll be more pressure from coaches who are meeting with these guys virtually to go on out there and get going, guys, until you're legally allowed to come back into our facility?
No, because you got to remember, this is OTAs. This is all voluntary anyway this time.
Yeah, and on top of that, they don't need to say that. That pressure is there.
No.
That pressure is understood.
These guys don't. What I don't understand about the policies is I feel like coaches should be allowed back in the building. You know, this is the time where they really need, you know, to be able to access all their stuff. And, you know, someone raised a good point. What about those coaches who have double titles? Like, you know, coach GM, like Bill Belichick, you know, executives are allowed in, but coaches are not. So he could technically get in, right?
Right.
I mean, to me, I don't like that gray area. Just let coaches in. You can still hit the 75 total, right? But you could. I still think this is an important time for coaches.
Nikki, the proposal to have a reward incentives for the hiring of minority candidates, that has been shot down by the NFL. What do you know? Why was it shot down?
It's been tabled, according to Roger Goodell.
Okay.
They've enhanced the Rooney Rule, so you have to interview more minority candidates and female candidates for executive roles, which I think is good. It's all positive. I was vehemently against the rewarding teams for doing the right thing, bribing them to hire minorities. I think that's an embarrassment. And I just think it's so degrading on so many levels. So I'm glad, and it was a long shot to pass, thankfully. But, you know, this is a problem in the NFL. It's a problem in many leagues, actually, but more so in the NFL just in terms of their staff. I mean, there aren't many minority owners, women owners in all leagues. But the NFL, it's more pronounced because you don't have a diverse coaching staff across the board. I mean, there are, what, 4 minority head coaches right now, 2 minority GMs. And that's a real problem, especially you look at the rosters, they're mostly made up of minorities. I just think it's, to be representative of these teams, you have to have a more diverse coaching staff.
How do you do it then?
That's the biggest question. They just got to hire more minorities. And it's not that these guys are not qualified. That's the thing. Everybody says, oh, just hire the person who's most qualified. Well, a lot of these guys are very, very qualified, and they deserve an opportunity to at least be interviewed, at least be considered.
All right, then what's wrong with something that's an incentive that would be a tiebreaker?
You shouldn't have to be bribed or compensated to do the right thing. It's a... to me, that's awful.
It's not a good setup. Like, that's just not a good setup.
Yeah, and anybody who gets hired through that route, people will always say, oh, you were only hired because they wanted to move up like 6 draft slots in the 3rd round. Like, that's just wrong.
I don't know what's going to incentivize then people to do anything different.
I don't think they should be incentivized.
I mean, look, guys, the reality is, 90% of the time, these teams know the exact guy they want to hire before they interview anybody.
Right.
Probably
right.
95% of the time. You know, it's all just a checkbox. They're just putting a check mark in a box for the majority of these candidates. And you know, by expanding it to two people that they have to interview now to satisfy the Rooney Rule, that's not going to do anything either. So I understand what you're saying, D-Mac. What will change by this? I don't know. Probably nothing. Probably nothing will change. All I know is that incentivizing the hiring of minority candidates by giving away draft picks, there's a lot wrong with it.
All right, well, how about, do you guys like the concept that you now have to interview a minority candidate for a coordinator position?
Yeah, for sure. I love it.
I think it's better than nothing. Yeah, absolutely. And you got to interview two minorities for the head coaching job now as opposed to one previously. You have to interview minorities and or women for executive roles now, which I think is important.
Women? So, what?
I know.
Oh, my God.
God, can you believe they know about football?
Oh, my Lord.
Let them in.
Hey, by the way, Brittany Bolin has got a she's in charge of something now. Is that right?
She's in charge of something.
And by the way, Brittany Bullitt, you know, like the future owner, she's got a job or something.
She's doing something now.
Right?
She's in charge of a lot of things. Yeah, she's been kind of spearheading their initiative. And every team has to have one, you know, this task force to begin to reopen things. And, you know, they've come out with a pretty extensive plan, as has every team. And she's been the one spearheading that group. It's about 10 people within the organization from different departments, as well as an, you know, infectious disease expert. So, yeah, I mean, this is like exactly what she was hired to do, right? Not, you know, in a pandemic, but she's the vice president of strategic initiatives. That's exactly what this is. So, yeah, I mean, kudos to her. It sounds like they come up with a really comprehensive plan, and you know they're being cautious about it, which I think is good. I think it's smart, you know, kind of watching how other leagues handle it while they have time to decide on the protocol for you know, really reopening it to players. So they're not going to rush into it, and frankly they don't have to. They can, a lot of their staffers can do everything they did in the office remotely,
right? And there's pressure on the players to just get together on their own now and just start working on stuff, you know, get going. Oh, you're not? Why not? Tom Brady's doing it. Why aren't you doing? You know,
different rules in Florida. Different rules in Florida.
Well, you talk to all the politicians. Sounds like we're open for business, too.
I just don't understand why this one's a big deal. I seriously don't understand why this is a big deal. It was 10 or less people. I mean, what is the big deal here? Seriously.
Yeah, it adheres to the rules. You got to be smart about it, but at the same time, they're slowly reopening things. So,
okay.
I'm not advocating either way. I'm not getting into the middle of this with you, D-Mac.
Okay, that's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It's Tom Brady. He's the doors.
He runs that town.
Here's what I laughed about. The head coach of the school had no idea it was happening. and
the story would be fantastic if they just like were trespassing.
Well, he's already done that once, right? He's already gotten caught for breaking and entering. So at this point,
our high school kids can't use the high school facilities. They're routinely being kicked off, and you can't use them. But no, it's cool. Tom Brady can just, you know, no problem. No big deal.
Well, I love the story when he broke into the guy's house, not break in, but he went into the wrong house. And the guy was so pumped, so excited that there's a stranger standing in his hallway.
Who wouldn't be?
Right. Like, this is great. Somebody broke into my house.
Look at this beautiful man standing in my entryway.
And he was looking for...
Duffel bag? He is going to rob me. He's putting all my stuff in those duffel bags.
Yeah, why did Tom Brady have duffel bags when he was there?
He was staying with a guy, right? He was one of his coaches?
Right. Correct. You weren't allowed to do that.
The
you
duffel bags were empty, though. Like, he was going to fill them with something.
Was this before the stay-at-home order went into effect, though? I'm not sure on.
The NFL rule at the time was supposedly Tom Brady was picking up an iPad from his offensive coordinator, but he showed up at the wrong house.
Big iPad.
Yeah, with duffel bags, which of course would indicate perhaps he's going to stay there, which you weren't supposed to do. So,
minor details.
It's Tom Brady. Well, what do we care?
What are you?
Nikki,
what are you talking about?
We are very concerned about your dog, Joey, based on the report from the vet calling your dog fat. And
Can you believe that? Well, he's self-conscious now. He's literally lying down.
What do you feed your dog?
He's on weight loss food, too.
Would you like to... Now, you put this out there. He is not fat. You put this out there on Twitter. I didn't discover this. You put it out there.
No.
So what did the vet tell you about your dog, Joey, we love?
They said you should be able to feel his ribs. I don't want to feel the dog's ribs. That's gross. No. He's gonna be a big boned dog, you know.
You also don't want him to be fat, though, Nikki. You know,
he's not fat. He's very normal and very happy, and may get a few too many treats. But whatever.
Is it the side scraps? Is that what's doing it here?
No. Well, you know, he's a very good boy. Okay.
Okay.
Listen, we're not doubting your love for him. We're wondering why you're so angry about the vet's.
It's body shaming. It's dog body shaming. It's wrong, I tell you.
No, I'm not going to lie. My dog, he gained about 15 pounds between his last visit to the vet.
How can you tell? He's so fluffy.
Well, that's the exact thing, Nikki. We had no idea because our dog, he's got such long hair. You know, when he gets matted, you got to shave that hair off. So my wife, she has to work like crazy to just keep that hair clean. She's got to brush him almost every single day. But if you go a month or so without a really good grooming, every now and then you got to shave him off completely, and he looks so skinny. We had no idea. We just assumed he was skinny the whole time.
Yeah, that's what I'm going with. Joey's just super fluffy. It's like all the extra weight is fluff. Okay. He's super skinny underneath, I swear.
Now, Nikki, you are in very, very, very good shape. Very good shape. Are you not taking Joey out and about? Are you not what's going on here with
Why
you?
Why are you such a bad mother to Joey?
Wow, you just dove right in and went there.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying what he was really trying to say.
I mean, we try to go for walks. He just, you know, prefers to lie down instead of walking.
No way. No way. Are you serious? Hold on. So he's fat because he won't go on a walk?
No, we go walking. We go to the park. He just doesn't, you know.
What?
He likes to just roll around more than he likes to just walk. So.
Wait, have you ever carried your dog back home?
I can't lift him. He's like 70 pounds.
This is a dog after my own heart. That's all I know.
So how far will you go? Like a quarter of a block or something? Or?
Well, we have to break it up into multiple walks just to get through one. Lord.
Oh, my God. All right, Nikki. Our thoughts are with Joey. Thoughts
Thanks.
And prayers
I'll tell him
are
you care.
With Joey. We appreciate it.
See ya.
That's Nikki Jabala of The Athletic brought to you by Perry's Pizza. Perhaps Joey's getting down with the Perry's Pizza. Mm. It's 5 o'clock, KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver.
How are we?
What's up?
What is up?
Oh, Lord. Okay, I'm walking up the hill.
Maybe Joey needs to walk up the hill.
Mama's running up the hill!
Oh, Joey, get some wind sprints in. Mama Hamler will get you right, Joey.
Mama Hamler will get you right.
Mama's running up the hill.
Can't nobody motivate you better than your mama. Let's go.
Run, Boris, run.
Run, Joey, run.
Run.
Bears be walking in the crib and everything.
All right, just after 5 o'clock, what a gorgeous day. Wow, holy cow, beautiful. And in terms of news of the day, Tyler, the NFL owners have tabled their conversation about incentives for hiring minorities. So surprised by that or not surprised by that?
Not surprised by it. You know, the initial reaction by just about everybody was that this thing's just not right. It's just not right. Now, I read some comments from Tony Dungy yesterday, who was against the new rule. He did not like it. He thought it was inappropriate, but he said at the very end that he thought it was going to pass. So apparently some people thought it was going to pass. The overwhelming majority, D-Mac. Matter of fact, I really didn't hear anybody step up to the plate and be like, this is the right thing to do.
I didn't either. I didn't think it was that bad of a thing, but boy, there were some people that, you know, were just vehemently against it. I thought Nikki brought up, and you brought up good points too, about, well, okay, the rule passed, the rule happens, and a coach gets hired. Whether he deserved it the most or not is always going to be questioned. I mean, I can't really get around that argument.
I mean, there's just something morally wrong about having to give a reward to somebody for doing the right thing. It's just backwards. It's just I don't know what the answers are, D-Mac. It's a complex issue that I wish it was easier to solve. So I'm not sitting. I'm glad they're out there discussing it. I honestly am. I honestly am happy that the NFL is hyper aware of the fact that it's out of whack. We don't have enough minority head coaches. We don't have enough minority GMs. So good for them for trying to come up with a solution. That just wasn't the appropriate solution.
Okay. And maybe what we were looking at was an instant fix, and really this fix is going to take some time, which may be more tied into hiring minority coordinators that would lead to head coaches. And now part of the new Rooney Rule is you have to interview two minority candidates for head coaching and one for a coordinator position. So perhaps that's a way. That just is going to take a little bit more time. Hey, let's go.
I got to tell a quick story here, D-Mac. Before we go to the phone here.
Sure.
So you were talking about how nice it is, and it is flat out gorgeous, man. Yeah. I love summertime, and I've kind of picked up a little bit of a new hobby here for my exercise. And I go through like little cycles of what I'm doing. Sometimes I do boxing. Sometimes I'm like hot yoga. For whatever reason, my current deal is I'm biking. Nice. I'm actually on the road biking, and so I'm trying to get anywhere between 10 and 15 miles a day in.
Good.
And
excellent.
It's been fantastic, man. So much fun. I live in a very hilly neighborhood, okay? So it's not an easy place to bike. Like, you can't just go out for a casual bike ride. You got to work if you're going to go through here. And so the last 2 days I've been out, I'm coming up the hill. It's the very last hill I've got to climb. And as soon as I get to that, I've got about a 45-second straight downhill shot to get home. So, this is it. Like, just get through this hill, and you're going to feel great. Well, right at the top of this hill lives David Bruton. Okay, so David Bruton and I live within a 1 minute walk of one another.
Yeah, and he's a big time biker, by the way. But
big time biker, time biker. So a couple days ago, I'm getting up to the top of that hill. I see David. I'm like, hey, David, what's up, man? And we say hello just real quickly. But I'm like breathing so heavy that I don't really want to stop and talk to him too much because that's a little bit embarrassing, right?
Right.
So today. I'm biking up this hill, and I'm feeling good, man. I'm super proud of myself. A couple days in a row, David sees me out there, out in front of his house. A couple days in a row, I'm like, man, yeah, man, maybe David and I kind of be in a little club together. Well,
nice.
So he was actually talking to a neighbor. He saw me down at the bottom of the hill, and I ended up having to stop to talk to somebody else. And then I actually missed the opportunity to converse with him. But I get to the top of the hill, and another one of our neighbors pops out. She's like, hey, Tyler, nice work. You're getting on that bike a lot, huh? I'm like, yeah, you know what? It's kind of fun, actually. Maybe I'll see if David and I want to get a little bit of a deal going on here, start biking together a little bit. She says, yeah, you guys should do that. You know what? I'm a former triathlete, did a lot of triathlons. And actually, matter of fact, I'm going to be training David here for a 96-mile bike race coming up.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, never mind. I'm out. I was feeling pretty good about myself, you know?
Are you on a road bike or a
No, it's a mountain bike.
Dude.
What?
Oh, you got to get on a road bike.
No, man. See, I mean, I could get a road bike if I was strictly going to use it for these purposes, but I don't need multiple bikes in my house. So we've got a bunch of trails. Like the reason why I've gotten into it is because the majority of where I'm riding, it's either on gravel paths or it's just like natural trails that have been built in the open space.
Okay.
So, no, I'm all about the mountain bike life.
Once you get on that road bike, it gets a little addictive. Yeah, you really, first of all,
I've never ridden one, not a single time in my life.
It's like, well, good for you for riding the trail bike, for sure, but you get on one of these road bikes, and you feel like you're on a rocket ship, which is fun.
Is it like that much easier?
It's faster, and you'll go further, and you'll have more fun doing it. But I don't know if it's as good or bad of a workout. You're probably getting the same workout in. It's just that once you get on that road bike, you really do feel like 15 miles, I can go 20 miles.
Then I can't believe how expensive these bikes are, though.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Gosh.
It's insane.
I mean, you got to spend a couple grand just to get like a middle-of-the-road one.
To get started, dude.
Right.
To get started. No, and then there's that. And then there's the...
It's fun, though, man. It's
great. Have you fallen down yet?
No, I've not fallen.
Right. So do you have the shoes yet? Do you have the shoes that
click in? No, I don't have shoes. I just wear tennis shoes.
Do you wear the kit?
No kit either. I wear a helmet, so I do that. I wear a helmet. I put on some sunglasses. I wear a backpack that I put some water in. But I just kind of look like a...
Dad,
average fat dad that is struggling to get up the hill.
Dude, I'm telling you, man. Well, okay, you're doing. It sounds great. I'm just telling you, I've gone through this, and I mean, it's like dominoes. Like you just I'll just get a cheap bike. Oh well, I could get all this bike's a little bit. Oh, I know. I'll get the shoes.
I know. I already feel that way. Like I got a pretty nice bike. I mean, look, I'm not trying to talk about my finances on here, but if you know anything about bikes, they're not cheap, you know. So I coughed up a little bit less than $2,000 for my bike because that was like the minimum I could find.
Wow.
a decent bike for. Is that expensive or no?
For a mountain bike, it sounds kind of expensive. Yeah.
It is.
Well, shoot, I don't know. I mean, for a road bike, you're just getting started. For a mountain bike, that sounds like you got a pretty good mountain bike.
I don't know. It's pretty nice, but now I'm seeing other guys riding on some of these bikes. I'm like, man, that thing looks a little bit nicer. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I can easily see this turning into an expensive hobby.
Do you have – so you don't have clips for your shoes with clips yet?
No. Okay. I'm not.
Once you get that, there's no turning back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Why is that such a game changer? Like, I just can't figure out why that's such a game changer.
It goes so much faster because your feet never leave the pedal. So, initially, every stroke that you make it's so much more efficient. And you will feel it instantly. It's addictive.
Yeah, but sometimes I like to be like Evel Knievel and put my legs out and do tricks.
You're doing good. The most embarrassing thing, and I think every single person who's ever ridden a real road bike with clips has experience, is you come up to a stop sign and you have to... you know, click out, and I think every single person has found a moment where they haven't clicked out, and they just fall over at a dead stop, which can be embarrassing.
That's I could easily see that happening to me. Absolutely.
And what happens too, when you get a road bike, you will fall. So you've got to understand you are going to bite it at some point, and, you know, we'll see how you do after that. But that all happens as well.
I just
you're doing fine. You don't need to do anything
different. I'm just kind of in the fat old guy.
Yeah, but you don't want to ride with David Bruton because he's going to walk out with the clips and the $10,000 bike and the freaking kit and the, you know, let's go for 70 miles.
He's seriously training like for like a 96-mile race. Right. That's the craziest thing I've ever heard of.
Right. I did one century ride, one 100-mile ride one time, and I could not believe I did it. And it was from Castle Rock to Colorado Springs. And it was just like, holy cow, that was something else. That was a trip and a half. But anyway.
Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, there was a time. But, you know, of course, you get fat, dude. And then what do you do? I don't know. You got to get back on the bike.
So I can get on Cherry Creek Trail pretty easily from my house.
Oh, man, you go all the way downtown from that. You can go to Boulder.
I think once we get back rolling and we're all back in the station, I'm going to try to bike to work once or twice a week.
That's a great idea.
I don't know how hard that's going to be, but that's my next goal.
It'll be easy going to work and harder going home because it's uphill going back the other way.
Yeah.
But, like, you can go on the Cherry Creek Trail from where you are downtown, and that is awesome. It's basically 13 or so miles, and the vast majority of it is just downhill. You fly.
It's got to be more than 13, right?
Well, it depends where you're coming from. My house is about 13 near Cherry Creek.
Yeah, I mean, basically, like, I'm basically starting in Franktown. That's pretty much where I'm at.
Wow, holy cow. Goodness. All right. Well, that's probably another 8 or 9 miles. So that's probably a good 22-25 mile ride. That's a great ride, man.
Yeah,
that's
fun. Awesome. I love having Cherry Creek Trail right by me. It just makes it so easy.
Yeah. All right. Cool, man. Good story. Hey, Mark Schlereth is ripping on me. Would you like to hear why?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Mark.
Next year, you know, D-Mac, I heard the promo. D-Mac, hey, man, this team's going straight to the, you know, the AFC Championship next year. Really? Well, what if... What if they got to change both tackles? Like, where's the development of those guys? Like, where did they invest in growing those guys, or just Mike Munchak is not only going to coach them, but he's going to go out there and play? Like, where is that part?
Mark is predicting ultimate failure with the tackles.
Oh, you're right. What was Mark's season prediction again? Was it 8-8?
8-8, yeah.
Okay.
But I wasn't talking about going to the AFC Championship this year. I was talking about 2021.
That was a strong, bold prediction, D-Mac. I mean, honestly, you caught me off guard with that.
Okay. Well, why is it so? Is it because our tackles are so bad? Is that the reason?
Aren't we just, like, trying to make it to the playoffs? Like, that's a pretty big jump. It just that's a strong prediction. Have we solved everything that you feel like we need to solve?
I think tackle's an issue, and I think cornerback's an issue. But you can address both of those in free agency.
What about inside linebacker? What about covering a tight end? I mean, yeah.
Nobody can cover a tight end. Name one team that's good at covering a tight end. Name one. Nobody can cover a tight end.
I don't know. Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, it's the biggest mismatch in the game.
Yeah.
You get a guy that has got wide receiver type of size and speed. You put him in the tight end spot. You get him matched up with an inside linebacker. You're talking about like a 4-4, 4-5 type of guy playing the tight end position, playing up against guys that are sometimes in like the 4-7 to 4-9 range.
Yeah, it's an impossible cover. Like when we're watching the Vikings, right, and you know, they got a tight end, like our guy, oh my gosh, Rudolph is hurt. So they're putting in their backup, and he's uncoverable. And they throw a couple of deep passes to him. I mean, these guys are monsters, and nobody can really cover them. So the key for the Vikings in this particular year, and this is kind of like the world of no duh, all the Vikings are trying to do in Pat Shurmur's offense, Tyler, is get to 3rd and 4 or shorter. That is obviously what their goal is. That is their entire offensive strategy. And then we're going to convert on basically press the easy button plays. And a lot of those go to tight ends or short passes or something like that.
Okay. Did you just hear that? My dad just popped in. Sorry, I was a little bit distracted.
I did not hear your dad.
Oh, well, this is fantastic. He just popped in. I had to tell him to be a little bit quiet. He has a little bit of a hard time with that sometimes.
Well, that's all right.
He said, steak and potatoes are waiting for you downstairs. That's what I'm talking about, Dad.
Nice.
That's what I'm talking about.
Nice. So if you can get to 3rd and 4 or shorter, which is the entire goal of the Vikings, then you can convert first downs, and you got Case Keenum as a quarterback. You know, the problem is if things are just crazy. So, I don't know, man. I get what Mark's saying. But if you're running the ball well, Tyler, don't tell me Juwan James and Garrett Bowles can't run block. They'll be fine run blocking. They will. And the Broncos will be running, you know, they'll be running through their center and their guard more. And we're going to talk about Cushenberry in a second.
There's a lot of assumptions in there. I mean, I've seen a 15 or 16 holding penalties called on run plays as well, D-Mac.
Boy, you got to be pretty stupid if you're just holding on run. Really?
I've been watching the film. It's not just in pass protection. Happens all the time.
By the way, here's what Melvin Gordon said about running inside.
I ran that so much at Wisconsin. You know, we were kind of an outside zone team when I was with the Chargers. And, you know, that was just based on personnel. So, you know, I told Coach, he tried to run it, but it just wasn't our strength in what we did. You know, he tried to get me my runs in like that, but that's just what I'm more natural with. It just comes second nature to me. So, like I said, Denver really, you know, I've watched them for a numerous amount of years. And, you know, I just know that's what they do. And I think I could be put in a position, like I said, to be successful and get back to the basics.
He's going to be great. He's going to be great. I don't know how they're going to use him and Phillip Lindsay, but he's going to be great. He thinks it's going
to
come together.
It's hard to really see what's gone, how things are going to play out, how they're going to use us. I'm not sure, you know, to be honest. I'm really eager to find out, you know, with this quarantine and everything going on. You know, I've spoken with them over the phone, but as far as, you know, sitting down in the room and just really getting a feel for what, you know, and how they're going to use us is going to be huge, you know, in the future. So we'll see. It's going to be competitive, though. I can promise you that.
Well, the good news for Melvin Gordon and for Phillip Lindsay, I suppose, is that he's been in a situation where he's had to share the responsibilities. So I don't think he's coming into town saying, man, I better be the bell cow. Man, you better be giving the ball to me 8 out of 10 times. Mm-hmm. That is my expectation of what is actually going to happen, how it's all going to unfold. But if it's not, if Pat Shurmur from day one is planning on having a two-back rotational system, I don't think Melvin Gordon is going to be bent out of shape about that.
Hey, Mike, you're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
If Philip Lindsay is so competitive, why don't we want him to compete?
We
want to give him the job.
First off, I don't think I ever said that it was disrespectful of the Broncos. Now, I might have said that if I was Philip Lindsay, I would feel disrespected. And I'll stand by that I would feel disrespected if I was Philip Lindsay. But I guess I don't really understand your question. I mean, Philip Lindsay will be competing. Of course he will be. I'm not opposed to him competing. Nor do I ever think that it's disrespectful for any organization to bring in a player that they view as better. That's what the NFL is. It happened to me all the time. It happened to me every single year. They were trying to do it. Half the time they did, half the time they could not. So I don't know. That's just kind of business as usual as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate what he's saying. And I know where Mike's going here. Why does everybody, and I feel it with Courtland Sutton too, it's a loyalty you feel once guys do well for the team that you like. How about that? And Philip has it even more because he was, you know, successful at CU. So people around here have been watching Philip Lindsay locally succeed for a long time. But, you know, the concept, I think this is that weird anti-Gordon sentiment. But I'm not worried about it at all because I am so convinced.
Hold on, D-Mac, help me out here because I still don't really even understand what the question is here. I mean, what's the question?
Well, he's seeing and other people are viewing that criticism about Melvin Gordon being, oh, why Melvin Gordon when we have Philip Lindsay? We didn't need to do that. This really should be Philip Lindsay. Philip Lindsay is, and Mike is interpreting that as, oh, people don't want Philip Lindsay to compete. And that's not exactly what's happening. What's happening is that people just feel a loyalty to Philip Lindsay. But, man, I'm telling you, the more that I watch what the Vikings are doing, I am convinced Melvin Gordon is not.
Do you want Drew Locke to compete? What does that mean? You know, like, if a guy is really good and he's talented enough to be a starter, it's like, to say that it was disrespectful, like if I was Philip Lindsay, that I would feel disrespected, I think that that's true. I also think that it's true that, honestly, man, it's never disrespectful for an organization to bring somebody in. That's their job. That's what John Elway does. That's what he's hired to do. Find people that are better at your job than you are. Every single year, that's going to be the goal. So I don't know, man. I mean, Philip Lindsay has got, he's got a legion of followers that are going to be very strong and they're going to be very supportive. In the first game that he erupts for 100 yards, it's going to be madness, especially if it were to happen at home and if some way we actually were able to have fans at the game. But, you know, that's okay for that to all be there. And it's also okay to acknowledge for Philip Lindsay, man, this sucks. That's a terrible situation. Yeah. He got, man, 3 months ago, John Elway was out there publicly saying that he was going to give him a new contract when he had no reason to be saying that. John Elway didn't need to say that. It wasn't even the normal time to be giving a guy a new contract. He's coming off back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, and John Elway comes out there, and Philip Lindsay's feeling like he's on top of the world. All of a sudden, you get to free agency, you get through the draft, and man, why the heck did John Elway even bring that up? That's what I would feel disrespected about. I would feel disrespected. If the GM came out and said they was looking at giving me a new contract in a public forum, and then in a 2 to 3 month span, they go out and they get a top-tier running back that they're paying $8 million for per year, and then they go through the draft and they get all these other offensive weapons, yeah, man, I would feel disrespected.
Yeah, but just, okay, I get it. Just be patient. It's going to be awesome. I think Melvin Gordon and Philip Lindsay are going to be fantastic together. I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be a lot better than people think, and I'm convinced that Pat Shurmur is not going the bell cow way. I'm convinced about it.
I don't understand where you're coming from on that one. You're basing Vikings, that off the Minnesota Vikings film.
2017.
Yeah, but that wasn't the plan, D-Mac. They fell into that because Dalvin Cook got hurt.
Pat Shurmur is going to have a Holy Grail moments. He's going to see everything clearly. The clouds will separate, and 2017 will be ringing in his mind.
So here's what's going to happen, D-Mac. You're going to end up being right, but I don't think it's going to be the plan. The plan is going to be to give the ball to Melvin Gordon. The plan is going to have him be the full-time workhorse. But then all of a sudden, Melvin Gordon's going to tap his head, and he's going to need a break. Philip Lindsay's going to go in there, and he's going to pop one for 12 yards. Then you're going to hand it off to him again, and maybe he pops one for 10 yards. And all of a sudden, you're saying, dang, this guy's actually got some mojo behind him. Philip Lindsay will find a way to make this a two-back system, but that's not going to be the plan going into the season.
I'll claim it was the plan as soon as I see it.
Yeah, I know you will.
That's the only thing that matters. All right, Fan Film Room. We look at Cush, Lloyd Cushenberry III. That's next.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.